Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 1:08 PM that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 29th. I thought I would kick off today with Bitcoin because I think the most important thing that's happened is it's not doing anything. And that's rather peculiar because it does tend to be one of the more volatile instruments around. And then we also had the halvening, and that happened in May. And generally, after a halvening, we've generally seen that, historically at least, it has tended to rally significantly because the limited supply argument tends to get bolstered. So that hasn't really happened yet. Of course, we did have the big rebound from the low in March, and the price is meaningfully above that right now, but it's been very quiet. So there's obviously some need of a catalyst to really start to get investors interested again. Of course, then there's also the technical picture, which is that it spent a good part of last year and the beginning of this year ranging below 10,000. And 5,000 was the upper side of the underlying base back at the beginning of 2019. It bounced from that in March. Then it rebounded. It's now trading above the 10,000 level. As long as it's holding that, then we can probably give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But if it were to fail in the $10,000 area, well, then that would represent a significant potential challenge. There's a lot of speculation about the potential for fintech or financial technology to become much more useful internationally over the next few years. There's certainly some credence to that. There's a lot of big transactions that are not effectively managed by the current transaction system, but they and that's also relying on the multi-party way of thinking about things. For example, when you think about big contracts between companies and countries, there are so many different people and entities that need to get paid, then that is something that could potentially be done via cryptocurrencies rather than the current system. But there's obviously a need for a catalyst, and so far there's no real sign that that is the case, even though we have increasing news, for example, that China is introducing a digital currency, and that may well be part of a plan to circumvent the SWIFT network. On the other hand, when we think about gold, then it does have an additional catalyst, which is that we've got negative real interest rates. And there's the clear potential that whatever happens with governments, politics, or elections, the clear need for stimulus to reignite the economic growth in most of the world is going to be a clear requirement, and that it means that there's going to be substantial pressure to devalue currencies. So gold was positive in here today, up another $16. Now it's coming back up towards the $1,900 area. If it can sustain a move back above that level, well, then we can talk about a failed downside break, so that would be encouraging. But it still has some room in which to consolidate, and we can't rule out the potential that it could come all the way back down to the 200-day moving average. But at least so far, in terms of the two-day rally, we have got the potential, at least, that this is a low of at least near-term significance. Silver prices were also up in a more dynamic manner. I think this is more like confirmatory evidence, particularly considering the rebound off the low 4 days ago. So silver is leading on the upside. Then $25 is the area where it will need to sustain a move above in order to confirm that this is a failed downside break. Then platinum prices were also up in a dynamic manner yesterday, but haven't been able to push through the $900 area. Well, the reality here is that platinum has been lagging all the way, and it's in need of a clear bullish catalyst. It's as much an industrial metal as it is a precious metal. The fact that platinum is trading at a fraction of the price of gold really does mean that there should be a value proposition at jewelry stores, that it's now it is certainly more cheap to produce platinum jewelry than gold jewelry, even though it is sold with 95% purity as opposed to 18 karat gold, which is 75% purity. Even if you take in the relative density changes and the sizing of platinum jewelry, it's still cheaper than it is to produce something in gold. Of course, you won't get it cheaper than you can get it from gold because platinum is a much rarer metal. So this pricing structure, it has been rather odd, and it has existed now for years. There's a clear need for a catalyst for platinum. Hydrogen could be that catalyst because hydrogen fuel cells require platinum as a catalyst in much the same way that diesel engines require platinum as a catalyst. But then the question is, how many hydrogen fuel cells are going to be produced? Well, the hydrogen fuel companies seem to be doing rather well, and they continue to rally. And that suggests that out there in the future, there could potentially, at least potentially, be demand for platinum. That would probably weigh on the outlook for palladium, one of the primary reasons why palladium has continued to outperform and has been so spectacularly impressive on the upside all the way through to the peak in early 2020 was because of the demise of both platinum and nickel, because it's primarily produced as a byproduct of those metals. So nickel prices have also been rather depressed. There is evidence of an uptrend over the course of the last few years, but it's very choppy. Nickel is a primary feedstock for new electric vehicles. But again, here we don't have an urgent need for lots of new nickel. And part of the reason for that is because a lot of the nickel that is hitting the market is being produced from pig nickel stocks. So there is enough nickel to satisfy the stainless steel market. Then, if we're thinking about stainless steel, well, then that is going to feed through into iron ore production. Iron ore prices pulled back in here this week, and they're a bit overbought in the short term. Obviously, what happens in China is going to have a very significant effect on demand for resources. And there's a certainly a temptation to think that because commodity prices are low on a relative basis, that when we think about on an historic basis, the price of, for example, the continuous commodity index, it very briefly exceeded the low in 2008 in March, and it has rebounded, and it's now back above the 400 level, and it spent most of the previous 5 years ranging around that 400 level. But of course, on a relative performance basis, it is way underperforming the stock market. So when we look at these long-term valuation metrics where commodities are trading at historically low valuations relative to the stock market, then it's very tempting to think that we're urgently going to have a very significant rebound. I think that it's probably more realistic to think of that as a 2021 story because we've got a lot of potential political volatility that's coming up in the next 3 months. Whether that is the European response to the coronavirus or Europe's the intransigence of different governments within the Eurozone in agreeing to implement the almost 2 trillion spending program, or the we've got the presidential election debate, the first of those in the USA tonight, but there's obviously a lot of concern about whether the democratic process is going to be sustained in the USA. Well, the stock market doesn't look especially worried about that right now, and it has so far held on to the rebound that we've had over the last 2 days, although it was in negative territory in here today. The Philadelphia Semiconductors Index has now broken upwards to new recovery highs and coming and didn't close on the high of the day. We may get some additional consolidation, but this is looking like a reasonably orderly consolidation and unwinding of the short-term overbought condition. It would really need to sustain a move below the trend mean in order to really confirm more than a short-term peak. When we then think about, well, what is the clear, what are the potential outcomes? Well, one thing that we can certainly think about is that there's going to be additional liquidity. It's really only a question of when. So when we think about the barometer of how the market is thinking about that, well, the dollar is as good as any, because the dollar tends to rally when it is less likely that there is going to be additional stimulus in the USA, and it's just very simply about a supply argument. If the USA is going to engage in massive fiscal stimulus, then that's going to increase the supply of dollars and they should go down. Well, today we had the news about Germany talking about some danger that the fiscal stimulus in the EU will be curtailed or that it will be delayed. So the euro rallied, the dollar pulled back. Whenever the dollar pulls back, it's stimulative for the global economy. Then, when we think about the Asia dollar index, it pulled back for a few days and it has been more positive over the last couple. So it's still holding the sequence of higher reaction lows. It is right now in the region of the medium-term sequence of lower rally highs. If it can sustain the move above 105, then that would be the absolute ideal scenario. But even in the event that it pulls back more sharply and tests the region of the trend mean, as long as it can hold the break above that level, then that would be very or the clear confirmatory evidence that we've seen a major change in the direction of the majority of Asian currencies. Of course, what happens in terms of the renminbi is a big question, and it did pull back for about 1 week, and so far it has been really steady over the last 4 days, but not going very much of anywhere. When we think about the Chinese stock market, one thing that I thought was particularly interesting is that there's a great deal of short interest has been taken out in the Chinese stock market. And historically, when we've seen those kinds of events, then it's not at all beyond the bounds of the potential that the Chinese government will step in and squeeze those shorts. So as the stock market comes back down towards the lower side of the range, and when we think about the A-share index, that's certainly clear. It's also true of the CSI 300, and that's also been coming down towards the lower side of its range. It may come back down towards the region of the 200-day moving average, but I suspect if it comes very much below that, then there will be some clear action to try and squeeze those short positions. If we then look at what's going on in India, the stock market there came back to the region of the trend mean and it has rebounded. This is rather positive action, but India still has a significant challenge in terms of trying to deal with the coronavirus and the hit to the economy. The rupee has strengthened and it is now pausing in the region of the trend mean. If the dollar continues to decline against it, then this would be an ideal area for that to occur. We are, however, seeing much greater volatility in other currencies. The Brazilian real has weakened rather meaningfully over the course of the last couple of days. The dollar has clearly held a sequence of higher reaction lows here, so there are certainly problems in Brazil and with the response to the coronavirus that has gripped that economy, but the balance of payments is still positive for Brazil, and I think that will probably give them at least some leeway. But the Brazilian stock market has now pulled back below the trend mean and done so in a reasonably dynamic manner. So it's clearly broken the uptrend over the last few years, and now it is pulling back again. So we're definitely starting to see more of a patchy environment overall. Then when we think about the Turkish lira, Turkey raised interest rates aggressively 2 days ago, and it has not arrested the decline of the lira. Well, that suggests that they're going to have to hit it again. And once a central bank starts to act to support the currency, then they'll just keep doing it until they get the result that they want. But Turkey is sort of out on it's losing friends rather quickly. And there is obviously a significant challenge here with the continued deterioration of the currency and the quantity of debt that's outstanding. So that is weighing on sentiment. It's, I think, perhaps quite likely that we're going to have a problem evolve in at least one market. And Turkey would appear to be a rather good candidate for a significant problem to arise. Because when we consider the hit that the global economy has taken from the lockdowns and the coronavirus overall, it would be unreasonable to think that every single country is going to come out of it in a robust manner. Some are going to experience much more difficulty than others. So far, it's been primarily the developed markets that have had the best performance so far. But there have been a large number of emerging markets have engaged in quantitative easing. These have been some that have been under some rather acute stress. Turkey is also another one of these companies that's been engaging in QE, but it's lost the faith of investors in the value of the currency. Other countries like the Philippines have so far been able to hold up reasonably well. And this, I think, is the clear difference. The Philippine peso has been really very firm over most of this year, although the pace of the advance has certainly moderated. So we're definitely seeing differentiation in terms of the performance of various emerging markets. One of the biggest challenges is that when people start to think about the emerging market basket, then they simply look at the MSCI Emerging Markets Index and think, well, that's emerging markets. But the MSCI Emerging Markets is heavily weighted by Chinese stocks. And if we were to strip those out, then there's very individual performances overall. But I think that there is interesting things happening in China because of the size of that large short position. And so far, the stock market has not pulled back in a violent manner. Eventually, we're going to see that pressured. So that's, I think, certainly something to bear in mind. Now, when we think about the bond markets, well, 10-year Treasury yields were a little bit softer in here today, but it's been completely inert for most of the last couple of months. And volatility in the bond markets continues to contract. The yield curve spread continues to behave like we have got financial repression. It's been hovering here around 50 basis points, the difference between the 10-year and the 2-year for most of the last 2 months. Every single time it's got up to 70 basis points, it has come straight back down again. Now, the Federal Reserve has stated on a number of occasions that they're not interested in yield curve control. They also told us that they were going to be buying $120 billion worth of bonds and mortgages every month starting in May, and that clearly hasn't happened either. What it really tells us is that there's a great deal of jawboning going on. and not a great deal of action. I think eventually that is going to be tested. But the reality is that until we see stress in the stock market, then the major central banks don't really have a big reason to stimulate aggressively. But everybody is pretty much insured at this stage that in the event that stock markets pull back below the 200-day moving average, then it's quite likely that that will very meaningfully make central banks aware of the risk, and that then they will step in and start to fulfill some of the promises that they've made. So that's the logic behind the continued resilience of the stock market. Investors clearly believe the Fed and the Bank of England and the ECB and the People's Bank of China have got their back. When we start to think about next year, well, I do think that next year will be more about commodities and reflation, and the Australian dollar has also steadied right now from the region of the 70-cent level. That was an area of resistance in 2019. It's an area of support right now, and this continues to look like a recovery overall. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.